It's Super Bowl week, the weekend that everybody knows for the parties, the prop bets, the football, the stars, the celebrities. Everybody's going to be descending on Las Vegas this week to take in the pop culture juggernaut that is the Super Bowl. Now, the part that a lot of people don't know is it's also the biggest day and week for private aviation in the U.S. I thought it was a great opportunity to explore this world a little bit further. Private jet world blew up during COVID. It softened a little bit, but historically, a lot of people think you got to be a billionaire in order to have a jet. Now, we see a lot of cool opportunities that have democratized jet ownership. But does jets make sense for people? Who do they make sense for? What does it take to get in? What does it really look like to be able to fly private rather than fly commercial? So I had my good friend Preston Holland on, Chief Commercial Officer for Flying Finance, to talk more about all things private jets. What does it take? How do you get it? Is it really reserved for Jeff Bezos and other billionaires? We're going to see this time what Crow knows about private jets. You feel alive, let's hit the dance floor. Don't work too hard, my break a backbone. Return of the Mac, the king is back though. Corvette and cash, I never lack those. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all got the semi-fold weight. Don't step out the line like this a probate. You hit the line and tried to locate. This for the time, got time for no day. Hey everybody, welcome to the Crow Knows Podcast. This is an exciting one. It's Super Bowl week. But as always, we got to have a little twist on it. And so I am joined by Preston Holland, Chief Commercial Officer with Flying Finance. Preston, thank you for coming on the show. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you? Thanks for having me on. I'm super stoked to be here.
Awesome. This is one of my favorite topics in the entire world. And we're able to use the Super Bowl as a bit of a jumping off point. But before we get into all that, take a couple minutes and talk to the listeners a little bit about how you got into the private jet world. What your journey's been.
Yeah, man. So it's actually kind of a crazy story, right? So you and I met on Twitter, X now, right? Yeah. So, yeah. You know, Elon Musk has rebranded it, the Everything app as of this morning, I saw. And so about, I don't know, what, 3 years ago, a friend of mine, Craig Fuller, reached out to me via Twitter. We had kind of, you know, been running in similar circles. We were both Chattanooga guys. And so he reached out to me and said, hey, I'm buying Flying Magazine. So if you can see, for anybody who's watching on YouTube, if you're listening, you can go on and check out the YouTube channel. But this is Flying Magazine, and this is actually one of my favorite articles. We can go into that later, is that cover right there. And so he said, hey, look, I'm buying Flying Magazine. And I said, bro, why are you buying a magazine? Like, it's 2021. I can't tell you the last time I even saw a magazine. And he said, look, you know, I read it as a kid, and it seems like it's kind of in distress. And you know, my dad was a pilot. And so I had, you know, grown up with flying on our coffee table. And so I said, okay, cool. Sounds fun. Right. I was running a service business in East Tennessee. You know, we're, you know, Southeast franchise, right. We're every private equity is like, you know, dream scenario. Right. And so I was running that. We had grown revenue 3 times in about 18 months, you know, 3x when we took over. And, I was doing that, was totally happy, but I said, yeah, sure. Like, let's do this. It sounds, you know, you only get a few big swings in your life. And so I said, yeah, let's do it. I said, as long as magazines is not really the only thing that we're looking to do, right? And he said, don't worry, we're going to run the media playbook on it. He had past history with that, starting and running a company called Freight Waves, which is a data and logistics, or a data company in the freight and logistics space. And so I said, cool. So joined in, we kind of ran a private equity style roll-up of aviation media properties, right? The thing about aviation is that it's got a really passionate group of people, right? Whether that's, you know, your single engine piston airplane in the Cessna 172, and I'm sure somebody in your listener group has their uncle or their dad, you know, primarily that used to fly little airplanes. It's that all the way up through Gulfstreams, right? So Elon Musk flies on a G650ER. That's kind of the, you know, called the top of the range that flying focuses on, and everything in between. So I came in, you know, pretty quickly, you know, we started, you know, saying, okay, there's some scale here. We've got some opportunity to kind of grow this thing. And a lot of these aviation media publications were living in kind of their own world inside of, you know, these big publishing houses, right? So Flying was owned by a company called Bonnier. Plane and Pilot was owned by a company called Matterhorn Media, who also did sewing and fishing and hobby activities, yeah. Right? And so we said, okay, look, let's take this model of, you know, let's we have the attention. Now, how do we actually create other products that are relevant for this audience, right? So it's this this idea of content to commerce, but we're not talking about, although we do sell merch and we sell hats and mugs and all that kind of stuff, this is more about how do we actually inject ourselves into the transaction, right? So our first project was we're building a fly-in community in Southeast Tennessee, which is you own your own airplane, you fly in, and you park your airplane in your hangar like you would your car in a garage, right? So that was our first, that was our first project that we announced. And then we acquired an aviation finance business. And, you know, we're kind of looking around and, you know, I had had some interest in kind of getting in the transaction side. And so I moved over from the media side after we had kind of run, you know, what we did, you know, we acquired 28 brands in 2.5 years. So if that gives you any idea of kind of the cadence that we were doing deals, we were signing NDAs about every 3 days, it seemed like, at that time, right? So we rolled up all these media businesses, and then I kind of branched off to run our aviation finance division. So what we do is we help people buy airplanes, right? So at its very core, your bank probably doesn't understand your airplane, right? I don't know who you bank with, but let's say you bank with Truist, or you bank with Regions, or even if you're, maybe you're more of a regional, right? You're in Nashville. Pinnacle is a regional bank that we have here in Tennessee. They don't necessarily have a team that understands your airplane, but there are banks across the country that like having that in their loan portfolio. So what we do is we help buyers identify what are their goals, what are they looking to do when it comes to financing, create a package, then we shop it, take it to market, find the best terms, and then, you know, help them through that. So that's kind of our business model. And then, you know, out of that, I started writing a newsletter because I kept getting a lot of questions about private aviation. And I know a lot of the players, right? I mean, look, it's, you know, I don't know how much you've dove into the world of private aviation, but it's like really convoluted. So I was tired of like answering the same question over and over again. So I said, I'm just going to write a newsletter and then I could send links. So that's what I do. I'm, you know, pretty big on big. I don't have a lot of followers by any means, but I spend a lot of time on Twitter. And, you know, private aviation is kind of what I focus on.
Yeah. And I'm a faithful subscriber to the newsletter. I love it. It's a lot of good tidbits. And we'll get into a lot of that for business specifically, because, you know, there's enough content about the actual Super Bowl in the game and everything like that. But I love the kind of the behind the scenes on all this stuff. And I thought the Super Bowl is not only the biggest game for football, but it's also one of the biggest private aviation events of the year. And I know you had some really cool stats related to that, but, you know, for a lot of people, they think about the Super Bowl, they think about the stars, all the celebrities that are going there. You know, we think about this in a couple different events throughout the year, but the actual nuts and bolts and logistics of private aviation is so wildly different than commercial, where there's just, hey, there's a number of gates and they run on the schedule. Talk to us a little bit about, I know you brought some stats with you of the Super Bowl, but talk to us a little bit about what is going on right now this week for private jets going into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so today is Tuesday, February 6th. We're recording here in the afternoon. Let me talk to you really quick about big events in general, right? Because this is not exclusive to the Super Bowl, and it's really interesting because if you watch, call it the high net worth trips that everybody wants to take, Masters, Super Bowl, US Open, F1's a big one, Kentucky Derby is a big one as well. Anywhere where there's a lot of private jets going into one location, there's a lot of planning that has to go on behind the scenes, right? So we'll use the Super Bowl as an example, but just understand that this applies year round for anything. Not as much like the World Series, right? I mean, I'm sure that there is, but it's not something that like takes a whole lot of planning. But the Masters, I know, takes, you know, basically the Augusta Airport has an entire team dedicated to figuring out the logistics, working with the FAA, making sure that you have enough places to park and how fast are you coming in and how fast are they leaving and things like that. So this week there's 475 spots to park in Las Vegas, period. To give you some perspective, there was 1,100 more planes parked in the metro area of Phoenix last year for the Super Bowl than there are on any other given day. So we're talking about a capacity constraint. If you just take last year compared to this year, we're like 600 spots short in the general Las Vegas area, right? So there's the Harry Reid, the traditional airport that you and I fly into when we fly commercial, right? Southwest and Delta and whatnot. You've also got, there's an executive airport, Henderson Executive Airport, which is just north of the city. It's actually less convenient to the strip than Harry Reid is, but that's up the street. And there's an Air Force base. There's some statistics that say that there's parking at the Air Force base. I don't think me personally, I'm going to fly my private jet into the Air Force
right,
base.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
So there's 475 spots. I have a Twitter follower and newsletter subscriber that sent me a DM because she and her husband have a private jet and they were thinking about going to the Super Bowl. It's a $2,500 deposit. So it's
non-refundable.
Exactly. It's like $1,500 a day to park there, $2,500 just to reserve your slot. They've been sold out for a couple of months now on reserve slots. So right now, if you're listening to this and you want to fly your private jet in, it has to leave. There's no option for you to park overnight in the Las Vegas area. So what a lot of these planes will do is they'll come in, they'll fly in, drop off their passengers, and then they'll go find somewhere else to park and kind of kick it, right? Luckily, Las Vegas is, there's a lot of really accessible airports that have relatively cheap parking. I would imagine the pilots pick somewhere that they can actually have something to do, right? Somewhere good to watch the game, things like that. And then they'll fly back in, pick up their passengers and leave. There's actually special procedures for NetJets and FlexJet to fly in because they have so much volume in that class that they have a certain slot of landing times and takeoff times that they can use on NetJets and FlexJets. That's how much volume's coming through here. But yeah, it's insane. I mean, look, 4,000 extra takeoff and landings around the Super Bowl in the Phoenix greater area. So you're talking about 1,100 parked, another 4,000 extra airplanes came in. And that's a mix of commercial and private, but honestly, commercial service doesn't increase that much around the Super Bowl. I mean, it does a little bit, but at the end of the day, you've got to, you know, you have so much capacity that's going into Las Vegas anyways. So there is so much more activity that's going on in those airports this week. And it started as early as last Friday. That's when people start getting in for all the activities throughout the week. And yesterday, I just read that they shut down the entire airspace for a few hours because President Biden flew in. And when Air Force One comes in, no one else gets to come in.
Yeah, sure.
So it's like, okay, you have this entire week of craziness, and now let's throw in the president visiting, and it just gets even crazier, right? So it's an awesome time for private aviation. I've got a graphic that I sent you, and I don't know if we could throw that up on the screen, but
yeah,
basically what you'll see, and you can watch this, there's some apps that'll show you this live. One of them is ADSB Exchange, is kind of the most public and open one. But if you hit play and you look around the Las Vegas area from the minute from the whistle blowing at the end, you will just see a smattering of airplanes leaving over the next 24, 48 hours. And it's just like way more than you would expect to see at that given time, going anywhere from Miami, Jacksonville, Tampa. They'll go up in the Northeast to Teterboro, you know, some, you know, places in Michigan and stuff. So they just scatter. I mean, they scatter like cockroaches to a light, right?
Yeah. It's so incredible to think about the logistics and how much, I mean, unfortunately they know the date well in advance, but Las Vegas is obviously, they're not strangers to private jets, but it's just the volume of it is so incredible. Probably the most famous one that people are talking about obviously is, you know, can Taylor Swift get from, I think it's, was it Tokyo or whatever, wherever her show is.
Tokyo.
Yeah. From Tokyo to Vegas, how quickly can she get there? And a lot of people don't totally know the differences on some of these planes. We'll get into that a little bit, but for her and what she has, I know you're very well versed on what she has and potential of what she's maybe selling and is she using it? Talk to us a little bit about, you know, is she going to be able to get there? What does that plane look like? And the confidence that she has to be able to get there in time.
Yeah. So if you go on to, there's a Reddit forum called, I think it's called Swift Jets, Taylor Swift Jets or something like that. And it actually tracks. I looked this morning in preparation for this podcast and somebody has leaked which airplane she was on. So she's on a Global 7500. She left LAX this morning, not LAX, but somewhere in the Los Angeles area. She left this morning going to Tokyo and it's a FlexJet airplane, right? So we talked about FlexJet and NetJets having their own designated time slots to land. It's a FlexJet airplane, Global 7500, nonstop to Tokyo. I would imagine that she keeps the airplane with her and that is what she takes back. And then she's got to go to Sydney like 3 days later. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not insignificant for her to come back to the Super Bowl, right? It's a 12-hour flight probably coming back this direction. you know, on a Global 7500. Good news is she's got a shower, right? Got a shower, nice king size bed. The cabin altitude. So cabin altitude is a measure that only really when you talk to the ultra elites that are concerned about private aviation start getting concerned about what altitude am I going to be at? Because for 12 hours being at an altitude of 10,000 feet, rough on your body, right? Makes you tired. Part of the reason why when you take international travel, not only is it, yeah, I'm sitting in a tube for 12, 14 hours, it's also your body thinks that you're at 8,000 feet elevation
right.
on a, you know, Boeing jet. The Global 60 or the Global 7500 has a cabin altitude, I believe, around 4,300 feet. So it's actually better pressurized than any of the aircraft that she owns. She's going to be on there for 12 hours. It's, you know, somebody who their livelihood and their entire persona is, you know, caught up in their voice, right? They're very concerned about, you know, health and wellness and making sure that, you know, 24 hours on a plane, that's hard on anybody, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't care who you are. I don't care how good a shape you're in. So if she's going to be on the airplane that long, having something that has a lower cabin altitude is important. So Global 7500 on the way over, Global 7500 on the way back. She owns a Falcon 7X, and she just sold her Falcon 900 like last week and just reserved 13TS as a tail number, we believe. You know, it's allegedly. We don't know that for sure, but we know she's been wanting that tail number for a while.
So. Yeah.
We'll see what she gets into next.
Consistent branding. I love it. Yeah, I know for a lot of people, if you've flown a 787 Dreamliner and an A350 commercially, those are very well known to have much better cabin pressure. You come out feeling a lot fresher than on some of the other planes, which is great. But I think most people would agree, hey, if we can fly private, that's the freshest you're going to feel no matter what. So I wanted to pivot a little bit now and get into private aviation for businesses. A lot of these listeners and people that are watching this are either, you know, executives, they own their own business. And I think it's a really interesting conversation because a lot of people, and I think I know for the longest time, really until fairly recently, I think the expectation is, oh, you got to be a billionaire to fly private, right? And either the planes are super expensive or the costs are outrageous. And it's not a fit for everybody, but I do think it's important to talk, and you're doing this in your newsletter, and a lot of people are becoming more open to these conversations, but there's a lot of facts and myths about private flight, you know, especially for business owners. All disclaimers, obviously, nothing that we're talking about here is tax advice. Consult your attorney, consult your lawyer, all that kind of stuff. But just a couple of guys talking here about private flights and planes. But talk to us a little bit first about, you know, what you would recommend for business owners or executives or people that are looking at private aviation, looking at a particular plane for, you know, things like their mission, things like that. Talk to us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So look, I've had conversations with people that vary on the private or on the net worth scale, right? It's funny. I had somebody that I think if anybody's on Twitter, they probably know this name. I'm not going to say it, but they were in my DMs and they said, hey man, I really thought that I needed to have, you know, $1 billion net worth to start flying private. Like, but you keep talking about stuff that like I could actually afford, right? I could actually use this as a business tool and actually be able to afford to fly private. I didn't recognize that there was actually options out there for people like me, right? That are, you know, high net worth, but maybe not ultra high net worth, right? Look, if you're flying a Global 7500, you're an ultra high net worth individual, right? You're not going to buy a $75 million airplane unless you're ultra high net worth.
Yeah.
That's just a fact, right? But you don't have to be in a Global 7500. You don't have to be in a Gulfstream G650 like Elon Musk. There is a wide spectrum of airplanes that you can fly on privately, have a very similar experience. Maybe you can't bring 13 of your closest friends, but you might be able to bring five, right? And for a lot of people, you know, the standard business aviation trip, this is inside of our industry, which we're pretty bad about kind of preaching this to the outside world. And this is part of what I'm trying to solve for, but the most common trip for any private aviation flight, and I don't care if it's the big flights or the small flights, is four people or less, 2 hours or less. That is what 90 some percent of actual private aviation flights occur. And you don't have to have a 13 passenger, 16 passenger, ultra long range jet to make those trips happen. And where a lot of the actual volume in private aviation happens is in smaller airplanes that fit that criteria, right? So, you know, as small as a single engine turboprop, which is going to be, you know, the TDM 960 series, it's going to be the Piper Meridian or Piper M600 series, it's going to be the Epic E1000GX. Your get-in price is somewhere around $5 million. It's probably a little bit less to purchase it. A pilot's going to cost you about $750 a day, and you'll be able to fly for $450 an hour of all-in cost, right? After you talk about fuel and maintenance reserves. When you start framing it in that way, then you add in the concept of bonus depreciation. And once again, AJ, this is not tax advice. I have a fantastic aviation tax consultant, because the other thing is your CPA probably does not understand your airplane. In the same way that your bank probably doesn't understand it, your CPA probably doesn't understand it either. You have to use it for 51% business use. And then there's a lot of flexibility. Again, not tax advice. I'll make an introduction for you if you need it. My Twitter DMs are open. But you can acquire this airplane, you can depreciate it and lower your tax burden in the first year by such a way that now you're flying basically at cost, right? You're flying at cost plus your fixed expenses. And look, it's not free to keep an airplane somewhere. It's not free to have insurance, right? There is actual real costs associated to it. But for, call it, under $1,200 an hour of all in, kind of being the get-in price, all of a sudden it starts to become a little bit more palatable, especially for people. Where we see people actually enter into the aviation space is, yes, you have your ultra high net worth and your private jet people and you know, call it the celebrities. That's a totally different bucket. That's really not who we're talking about here. We're talking about the regional car dealer that has multiple locations in small cities that airline service, frankly, is terrible to get to. I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm going to be completely transparent with you. Unless I'm going to Dallas, Atlanta, Charlotte, or Detroit, I've got to connect, and it's going to take me 8 hours to get somewhere.
Right.
No matter how you skin it, that's how it's going to be. But Chattanooga has a lot of very interesting, strong businesses. Little Debbie is here. So if you've ever eaten a oatmeal cream pie,
from
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yeah.
We've got Volkswagen. We've got Unum. We have a couple of transportation logistics companies that are here. But air service for those executives or even time-sensitive employees is frankly a bit of a nightmare, especially if I'm going, let's say, from Chattanooga to Memphis.
Yeah.
It's a five-hour drive, no matter how you skin it, no matter how fast you drive. It's a five-hour drive. It's an eight-hour commercial flight because I had to go to Atlanta and then back up. Or it's an hour and a half in a single-engine turboprop, and I can be out and back in a day.
Yeah.
That's the type of unlock that you get, especially for these businesses who are saying, look, we're really time-sensitive. Maybe it's commercial real estate where time is of the essence. And I think that we will get to a point again in the next 18 months that timing actually is a competitive advantage. Or maybe you're a franchise owner and you have multiple locations that aren't contingent and you need to go and, you know, have somebody in your executive team go visit one of the locations for a time-sensitive matter. That's where private aviation is, the utility of private aviation really starts to come in. And then once you start doing it, it's very hard to go back, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, once you do it, it's tough to go back. I will tell you, as someone who has flown private a few times, I am not in any means I don't own my own jet, but I have been able to fly private a few times. And every time you get on an airliner after that, you're going to be like, this is awful.
Yeah. It's, I think a lot of people, we generally think about it as, you know, what we see on TV, right? So we see, you know, you watch Succession and you see the big, huge corporate jet, or these, you know, essentially what almost looks like, you know, 767s that are repurposed for private, and, you know, the luxury finishes and the, you know, the service and all that kind of stuff. But so what you're saying is, in reality, majority of private aviation, it's utility based. It's not glamour. It's not, you know, high end luxury. It's a couple million bucks to fit a few people, and time is the real utility there versus necessarily privacy or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, look, you look at a Honda jet is a great example, right? So Honda doesn't just make generators or, you know, cars. They also make jets. They have a jet division. The Honda Jet is, you can fit six people in it. It's a little tight to fit six. Four is very comfortable. The finishes in it are going to be very similar to a BMW or, you know, a high-end BMW or a Lexus. You're not talking about, you know, you don't have, you know, ivory, you know, countertops.
Yeah.
You know, ridiculous yeah. things like that, right? Frivolous things like that.
Right.
What you have is you have privacy, luxury, you have Wi-Fi while you're working, and I can go from Chattanooga to Bentonville, Arkansas in an hour and 50 minutes, as opposed to commercially, that's a eight or nine hour flight via Atlanta. And I can't even get into Bentonville. I have to go into Fayetteville, the town next door, get an Uber, get into Bentonville, right? Or I can go into KVBT, which is my favorite airport in the world. If you've never been there, you should go. It's a general aviation airport. But you fly directly in, you do what you need to do while you're on the ground, and then you're home. The trip that I'm referring to specifically, this trip to Bentonville, I woke up, I dropped my daughter off at daycare because I am the morning person in our household. Dropped my daughter off at daycare, went to the airport, we got on the plane, we flew out, we had a full day of meetings, we ended about 5 o'clock, got on the airplane, and I gave my daughter a bath when I got home. That is, yeah. And that's the type of, I was an entire state away and a 10-hour commercial flight that would have been 20 hours of commercial travel back and forth.
Yeah.
Right? That I was able to accomplish in what's essentially 13 hours, right? That's the type of unlock that private aviation has for people. And the other thing is you don't have to own the entire airplane. That's actually the most committal way to get into private aviation. There's a bunch of other ways that you can do it.
Yeah. So, and I want to talk about that because I think what a lot of people have seen is kind of the democratization of private flight and increased accessibility. And we see this in, it was seen in homes with Picasso, right? We've seen it in a lot of, the model has somewhat existed before, and it became a little bit of a, you know, punching bag in the timeshare space, right? Which is, and so, but I think it's interesting how a couple of these companies and in the private world, it's become really big lately, is how more people are able to get into private jets depending on what they need. And I also want to point out too, for the listeners and the watchers, one of the things that I really liked about your newsletter, and the way that you talk about this is you're very upfront and open of like, hey, you cannot house hack a jet. Do not try. This is not, you know, a vacation home where you're going to try and rent out, cover your mortgage and all that kind of stuff. And so I always appreciate that you're not trying to sell some gimmick like a lot of people are on X. And it's,
yeah,
it's
AJ, I've got a message to the TikTokers who are preaching this. And if you're out there listening, I would love to sit down and have a long format conversation and dissect exactly where you're getting that math, TikTokers of America, because frankly, I work in this business. I know probably more than the average Joe when it comes to private aviation. I cannot make the math make sense for how you fly private on your jet, other than your jet flying 1600 hours a year without you on it. And I'll tell you this, NetJets doesn't even fly their airplane 1600 hours a year. So how are you thinking that you're going to do it? You can offset your fixed costs by chartering. There are ways that you can lower your effective hourly rate, but you're not going to, look, this is not a triple net lease on a commercial real estate piece. This is not a duplex. This is not an appreciating asset. It's a, for every hour that you put onto that airplane, there is a few dollars that goes out that exhaust pipe and is never coming back,
yeah.
Right? And every day that goes by, there is a few dollars that fall off the airplane, right? It's a depreciating asset. You can't do value add to an airplane. Like, it's physically not, like, it is mathematically impossible to do that. So with it being a depreciating asset, your best bet is to lower your fixed cost, which lowers your effective hourly rate, right? So you can share an airplane, right? There's a company out there that kind of does, I call it Tinder for private jets. It's way more bespoke and, you know, high touch, but it's called Partners in Aviation. Mark Malloy, the CEO and founder of that, is a personal friend of mine. And what they do is they say, okay, AJ and Preston, okay, they both live in Chattanooga. Preston's flying for work and AJ's flying for personal. That's a great marriage on an airplane. Right? Because I'm going to need it on Monday at 8 a.m. And AJ is like, if I got to go Sunday, all right. If I got to go Tuesday, that's fine. Right? No. you're flexible, I'm inflexible. They pair us up together. They do all of the management between the two. They write the contracts. In the event that one of us wants to get out, they remarket the airplane, you know, go to market with the airplane. But, you know, you can share. That means that the insurance bill that comes in, that's $30,000 a year, well, we get to split that down the middle, right? The hangar rent that's $1,500 a month or $2,000 a month down here at Chattanooga Airport, we split that down the middle, right? The management cost that we pay to Partners in Aviation or whoever the aircraft management company is, that automatically gets split in half.
Yeah.
So now when you and I fly on the airplane, we're flying fuel plus maintenance reserves, and then you take the half of all that fixed cost divided by how many hours we fly, and our effective monthly or our effective hourly rate actually drops. That's kind of the second most committal way to do it, right? You walk even further up the value chain and you have a what's called a fractional program, right? So this is, if you have any friends that say, oh yeah, I've got a NetJets share, right? So NetJets has a jet card. This is not that. This is a NetJets share. You're actually buying a small portion of one actual real life airplane, right? So N123NJ, right? You're going to buy a portion of that for a fixed, you know, for a fixed amount, right? For instance, on a Phenom 300 with a very popular fractional operator, you're going to pay $600,000 to buy that 1/16th of that airplane, right? So you and 15 other potential owners all own that asset. You get to depreciate that asset, right? Again, not tax advice. We are all hoping that 100% depreciation for airplanes comes back. We're hoping for a vote this week in the Senate.
Yeah.
It passed the House. It would be huge. You get to depreciate a fraction if that makes sense for your financial picture. And then you share those fixed costs across 16 people. So you pay 1/16th of the fixed cost. In the example that I'm talking about the Phenom 300, you've got, I pulled up a quote that I got for a customer, a client of mine last week. And you're going to pay $11,000 per month of fixed cost. You're going to pay $600,000 up front for 1/16th. Then when you fly the airplane, it's going to be $4,200 an hour. Now, to give you a perspective of what does that number mean, that number on the retail market, kind of on the open market, if you will, your get-in price is going to be $7,500 an hour. You might pay up to $9,000 an hour, depending on a few different factors. And that gives you access to 20 days on the plane. And you can fly, within reason, as many hours as you want to in that one day. This works really well for out and backs, right? So if you're saying, look, I really only need to fly 20 days a year, and a lot of times I'm doing out and back in the same day. I'm going to leave first thing in the morning, 5, 6 a.m. The plane leaves when you want to leave, and then the plane comes back when you want to come back. You want to come back at 11 o'clock, have a full day of meetings, go speak at a conference. It's a fantastic option for people who are doing the conference circuit, especially if you know, in the conference world, you can make the organizer pay for your hours. On that, you say, hey, look, you know, part of my fee is you have to pay, you know, whatever for me to fly in there private. And so, you know, you get 20 days a year, and then that also scales up, right? So you want to buy 1/4, 4/16ths, right? You're going to pay $240,000 buy-in. You're going to pay $44,000 a month in fixed costs. I know it's a lot. And it scales proportionally, right? You may not pay all the way to $44,000 a month,
right?
But then you get 80 days a year of access to the airplane, fly as much as you want. So that's great for road shows, you know, and even mix and match, right? You know, supplemental lift is a real thing. So that's kind of the, you know, we're talking about owning a whole airplane is the most committal, right? Because you're stuck with that airplane, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you own it. And if you want to go, let's say your airplane holds six people and you want to, and your mother-in-law says, hey, I'd love to tag along with the grandkids.
Yeah.
Right. No shot. Not going to get in. You physically can't fit her in there. Right. So you're committing to my mission. And I say, look, this is what I'm flying. Partnership is, you know, very similar situation. In a fractional, sometimes like with NetJets and with a company called AirShare, you can actually flex up and down depending on what your actual mission is, right? So you own a fraction of a Challenger 3500, which is a mid-size coast-to-coast business jet, super mid-size. But really, I just really need four people to go from, you know, Chattanooga to Miami, right? That's a great Phenom 300 trip. You actually flex down, right? So now you're starting to work with more flexibility. NetJets lets you do the same. So that's, you know, more committal, more cash up front, lower hourly cost, and there is a terminal value at the end. These things typically depreciate about 10% per year if you're, you know, 10 to 15%, depending on the model, right? Buying into Phenom 300 right now is probably going to be more like 6% per year. It's a very in-demand model. At the end of the contract, the five-year contract, you're going to sell your share either back to the company or re-up, and you'll actually have, you know, residual value there. The least committal way is just call the jet and say, come pick me up, and we're going from here to there, and let's go. That's called on-demand charter, right? And it's, you know, governed under a different set of laws than any of the other ones that we've talked about up to this point. You do have to pay federal excise tax, which is a big bummer. And you're going to pay the highest dollar per hour that you can fly across the different spectrum, but it is least committal. It is call it up, it picks you up, it drops you off, and you're done. You have no other obligation to that company. So it's a really good option for people, you know, who are looking to fly 50 hours or less in a year. That's a great option for you because you don't have any commitments. And maybe you want, maybe you're going to take a golf trip and you want to take a King Air. And then another time you're taking your entire family, you know, plus the dogs, you want to fly on a G450, right? You just say, hey, today I need a G450, right? So it's like the least committal. And that's where like your company's like Wheels Up live, right? Wheels Up lives in that on-demand charter world. So
yeah. It's incredible how over the last few years, and I know going through COVID, 2020-21 was a massive spike in private jet, the world, not only for personal, but especially for business use as well. And it seems like that's cooled off a little bit. Because I know probably a lot of fear from your clients and people you talk to, business owners and people that were looking at this kind of stuff, that, hey, they were thinking, man, this bubble's going to burst, and assets kept going up and up and up. Costs kept going up and up and up. What are you seeing now in terms of objections generally from people that are looking at exploring this for business purposes? Is it still a, you know, hey, I don't know how much it costs? Is it the fixed cost items? Is it safety? I feel like that's something that I hear a lot when I talk to people about it, that there's this perception that private aviation isn't safe, or it's not as safe as commercial. Now, probably helps seeing, you know, the 737 MAX with doors blown off and a lot of the uncertainty now around that. But talk to us a little bit about the safety that you see and what goes into that to ease people's mind that maybe have the money to do it, but are a little bit kind of cautious about, you know, well, I don't know how these pilots are trained.
Yeah. So I think there's two parts to this conversation. One is kind of general market and where are we now? We'll touch on that in a minute because frankly, you have to decide if you want to get in the market or not, right? Is this safe enough for my family? Let me give you a statistic. In the annual meeting for Berkshire Hathaway, right? Charlie Munger, rest in peace, made a statement and he said, NetJets is a beautiful business. He said, it's a lovely business. It's, and for a whole lot of reasons, the fundamentals of that business are actually fantastic, right? NetJets has never had a fatal accident in its entire history, right? And they have bought a lot of companies. They've never had a fatal accident, right? The statistic on, and I don't have it pulled up right in front of me, but essentially, when you talk about a two-person professionally crewed airplane, which means for the most part, it's going to be almost all Part 135 operations that you fly, which is, let me call it up and take it somewhere. Fractional operations, you know, any of the big names that are out there. And then if you own your own airplane, right, you need to do your own safety checks on your pilots and things like that. But a business aviation flight is defined as two pilots with a professionally managed crew, which means that they have training regulations and safety management systems, et cetera, et cetera. They have a certain level of decision making. The fatality rate worldwide, as well as nationally, is actually less on business aviation than it is on commercial aviation, right? If you go back, you know, to the 1990s, right? Look at 2010, and as a percentage, it's like 0.07 per 100,000 hours or something like that. Please don't quote me on that. There is data that is out there. But look, yes, private aviation is inherently likely less safe than commercial aviation. simply because the commercial aviation stuff, there's so much regulation that has come out because of fatal accidents that have created all these different rules and regulations. But that's also, you have to get to the fringe for the most part in private aviation before you start getting into a relatively unsafe situation.
Right.
So that's going to be, you're pushing the envelope, right? Pilot says, hey, we're not going to go because it's not safe. And you say, I don't care, let's go.
Or you own the plane and you fly it.
Exactly.
And
you decide. Or you own the plane, you fly it. And look, you know, there's a lot of statistics around general aviation accidents. And the problem is it's a lot of times a dentist or a doctor or a franchise owner, whoever, that they spend 15 hours a day not thinking about flying or flying. And then they jump in the airplane to fly, right? These are professionally managed crews. This is what they do. 10, 12, 14 hours a day is all they think about, right? They do recurrent training, you know, more often than, you know, anybody in any other industry, right? It's incredibly up to date on their training level. So with a professionally managed crew, it's incredibly safe. If you're flying yourself, it's more akin to driving a motorcycle, but I make this argument, you know, to my wife. I am a pilot, and she says, well, it's unsafe. And I'm like, well, I get a motorcycle and there's a lot of people out there that could kill me.
Yeah.
Right. Frankly, there's trucks and there's cars and right. In an airplane, it's my fault. For the 99% of the chance, if something happens, it's on me, right?
Yeah.
It's on you doing it. So then you have to ask yourself, where's my envelope? What am I comfortable doing? What am I not comfortable doing? Right. When it comes to aviation. So, but yeah, in a professionally managed crew, incredibly safe. I think, look, if you're looking for a proxy in part 135 chart, I wrote about this a couple weeks ago, is how do you choose a safe private jet operator, right? There are some proxies for this. There's a certification called Argus certification, which I'll save you a whole lot of jargon, but basically they're safe, right? They have to be safe to get this certification. And you don't just pay to get their badge on your website, right? You actually have to, they do an on-site audit and things like that. Wyvern, W-Y-V-E-R-N, is another one that does a certification. So, you know, look, in the same way that you're not going to buy a car from the buy here, pay here lot on the corner, and you're going to go to the Nissan dealer or the Chevy dealer or the Lexus dealer, right?
Yeah.
Do the same thing with private aviation. Have a name brand, and you greatly increase your probability of having a safe outcome.
Yeah. So, like everything, don't take shortcuts.
Exactly.
Buy quality. Seek quality. But I think this has all been incredibly helpful to talk about how accessible this really can be, you know, with all caveats of make sure it makes sense for you business-wise, financially, all that good stuff. But if, you know, we have a lot of listeners, and there's a lot of people with very successful businesses that can do this, and it actually does make sense for them both financially and time-wise. But there's just been a lot of hesitancy, or there's a lot of guardrails that don't exist anymore that are really exciting, I think, and a great opportunity for a lot of people that are listening. So we've only got a few more minutes left, and it's time for what's become my favorite part of these shows, which is our Mount Rushmore segment. And for this, I want to know, what is on your Mount Rushmore for private planes? And for this one, it's a little bit flexible, right? It could be your four favorites, your four most aspirational, whatever you want it to be. Give me your Mount Rushmore.
All right. So thought a lot about this question. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to subdivide this. In aviation, you have multiple categories of airplanes, right? So I'm going to pick one small airplane. I'm going to pick one airplane that chances are there's a fair amount of you out there that can afford this airplane and have it professionally crewed. I'm going to pick one that, you know, frankly, if I, you know, ran a really successful business, there is a chance that someday I can own one of these. And then I'm going to go to one that, like, frankly,
yeah,
if there's a listener out there that can afford this, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Chances are probably not, right? So, okay. So I'm going to subdivide it like that. Okay. So single engine piston, something that, like, people can probably afford. Learn how to fly in, things like that. I'm going to go with a Beechcraft Bonanza, something 2000 and early, 2000 and newer, right? It's funny, in the small piston world, we just financed a guy's 1963 Bonanza. Like, the age range is totally different in,
yeah,
in that,
yeah,
range, right? Because you replace engines a lot and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to pick that. Couple of reasons. It's fast, retractable, can fit six people. It's one of the best used six seaters. I had mentioned, so this article right here that's on this cover, it's called Best Used Six Seaters. It's the best performing article on flyingmag.com of all time. And the Beechcraft Bonanza is on the top of that list. So I'm gonna add the Beechcraft Bonanza. I'm gonna go to the one that people can most likely afford, frankly, is the PC-12. The Pilatus PC-12. My favorite part about the PC-12 is you can load it up with gold bricks and all of your friends, and you can still take off in like 2,000 feet. It is an incredibly high performance airplane. You can load it full. You know, my buddies and I like to play golf, and you know, I could take an 8-person golf trip, everybody's golf bags and clothes for a week, and we could fill the thing up comfortably, go get as tight to the airport or as tight to the great golf course as we want to. Drop us off there, we can go play golf. So PC-12, you're looking at, you know, get in price, probably $3.5 million, $5.5-6 million is I think what they're going for new right now. If you can find one, the hard part is they're really in demand. Everybody loves this airplane. And you fly it for about, I don't know, $600 an hour, $700 an hour, all in, right? So it's like, okay, yeah. It actually starts to sound affordable. There's a lot of pilots that can fly them too. Okay, so that's that one. Now we'll move up into I ran a very successful business, and now I'm looking to kind of buy my first, you know, big boy jet, right? Yep. Is kind of, you know, so the super midsize class. I'm going Challenger 3500. It's made by Bombardier, which is a Canadian company. It is fast, quiet, fuel efficient, very luxurious interior. And it's got pretty impressive performance when you talk about, you know, relatively short runways, and you can get up high and go fast. So that's my, like, I'm a big boy now. I can afford a big boy jet. And now I'm going to go to frankly, it's Taylor Swift. Here's my prediction. I think this airplane is what Taylor Swift buys. I have zero insider information on this. And yeah. Taylor, if you would like some consulting, call someone way smarter than me.
Taylor, as you're listening to this, which I'm sure you are this week on your trip, yell at Preston.
Yeah, exactly. The Falcon 10X, it doesn't come out until 2025, probably. And certification dates on airplanes, just as like an aside, if somebody tells you that it's definitely coming out in a year, go ahead and add 2 years on the back. Supposed to be out this year. It's not going to be out this year. It's supposed to be out next year. We'll see. Honda took 10 years to actually bring their airplane to market, to give you some perspective.
Oh, wow.
But the Falcon 10X, it competes with the Global 7500, which is what Taylor's flying on, and the Gulfstream G700. That's kind of the class that it's in. $75 million is your get-in price. It's going to cost you about $1 million before you ever fly it. So look, it's super expensive. I'm buying the 10X though, because the spec sheet says it can land in 2,500 feet, and I will believe it when I see it. But that is not a lot of runway. To put into perspective, when you're flying commercially, the shortest airport that you're probably flying into is 6,500 feet, and that's going to be like Love Field or something that flies 737s only. If you go to Atlanta, you're landing on 7,500 feet very regularly. So it says you can land in 2,500 feet. I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it, but I want to take a shower in my private jet and be able to lay in my bed and not hear any of the people up front.
Yeah. Man, the bonus depreciation on that can help offset it.
Can you imagine 100% bonus depreciation, knock on wood, on a $75 million airplane? How much tax would you need to have to pay for that to make sense?
What a world. Right. What a world. Again, not tax advice. If you are not a billionaire, don't go chasing that bonus depreciation. $75
million. And frankly, that's where the TikTok guys, quit saying false information on TikTok. I'm tired of getting DMs saying, oh yeah, I'm going to bonus depreciate my jet, and then I'm going to fly it for free, and I'm going to charter it out when I'm not using it. I'm going to fly 100 hours for free. The math just doesn't make sense.
Just like that. Well, man, this has been awesome. I could talk about this for hours, days, months, years. I love this stuff. I hope everybody that's listening has a better understanding of what options are out there, and that this is a lot more a lot more accessible than I think a lot of people think, and can be a really good fit for a lot of people if it makes sense. Where can the listeners find you? Plugs, you know, website, Twitter, X, all that good stuff.
So here's my plug. I am most active on Twitter. It's the easiest way to get a hold of me. My handle is @PrestonHolland6. I don't have the @PrestonHolland tag. If you're listening, I will buy it from you. @PrestonHolland6, DM me there. FlyingFinance.com, FlyingMag.com, FireCrown.com if you want to see all the different media companies that we own out there, and would love to talk to you.
Awesome. And the newsletter, obviously, as well, that you can subscribe to. Hit up Preston if you want to get on that. It's a great read, whether you're interested in actually purchasing a jet or not, or chartering. It's just an awesome read. It's a lot of fun and super helpful. So I think I can say without a doubt now that that Crow knows private jets. So Preston, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
That's awesome. Thanks, AJ. I appreciate it.